Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to violence.
Welcome to Lost in the Static.
Hi everybody, how you doing?
Four bowls of blueberry before bed does not make for a good night's sleep.
I can't stand blueberry, so...
It's that time of year, dude.
Not going to happen for me. Blueberry is terrible.
Yeah, just do the Adam and Eve promo.
Okay. So, if you go to Adam and Eve, and at the very end, when they say, hey, do you have a promo code? You enter static. You get 50% off of just about any item. So, your most expensive one there, you get half off right away. Along with that, they're going to throw in three free DVDs. I almost said free three DVDs, and I have no idea what that is.
Freebies?
Freebies. You get three free DVDs.
Say it slow.
Three free DVDs. You get a mystery gift that...
Is it mysterious?
Mysterious. Usually something small like lube or...
Deep throat gel.
Cock
ring.
Flavored stuff. Or and you get free shipping in the U.S.
Yippers.
So there you go.
Promo code static.
Promo code static. Or, on the other hand, if you go to 1201 Beyond, shut off your ad blocker, and check out our Amazon recommendations. You go, you do any shopping through Amazon. It doesn't have to be what we promote or recommend. And we get a tiny, tiny little itty-bitty cut of that.
He does mean small.
Yeah, it is tiny. In fact, it's kind of fun because I have to run two separate accounts, one for the U.S. and then one for the U.K.
Right.
And the U.K., it's interesting because the U.K., we've been running it for months and months now, and it hasn't quite reached the point to where they can send me a check. So it is a tiny, tiny cut.
Yes.
So yeah, U.K. listeners, if you're willing to help out, get me up to there where they can finally cut me a check and send it over here, and then I have to find a bank that'll cash a British check, which is not easy to do.
We're in Green Bay, or we don't have a lot of Brits here.
Well, luckily we do have an exchange office. It's shut down at the moment, but
The time we're recording this, the government doesn't work. But
yeah, but luckily we have an exchange office because we're close enough to Canada that. You know, when all those loonies and toonies come in.
Damn Canadians.
Hey, I love the Canadians. They're cool.
So, Scott, do you watch any of the shows that just had their series finales recently? Futurama, Dexter, or Breaking Bad?
I did watch Futurama, and I mean, that's.
Well, and that one's only a technical series finale. Because they're going to be on it's a full-blown crossover with the season finale of The Simpsons this year. They've done a table read for it and everything. Futurama is appearing on The Simpsons, so that'll actually be the last appearance of the Futurama characters will be on The Simpsons.
I don't care.
So that's why technically that will be the finale for those characters be on The Simpsons.
To me, that final episode, which did bring the feels.
I thought it was weak, very weak.
Okay.
It felt like exactly what it was. Not written as a series finale.
Okay.
That to me was the problem, that it felt like it was written as a season finale because that's what it was. They weren't canceled till after they'd produced that episode.
Right.
And I think that was part of the problem, that it didn't feel final because it wasn't.
Right. And that actually is a common occurrence, isn't it? If a show gets canceled after their season finale has aired, then...
That actually... And see, part of that is... Part of the problem with that is built into the very nature of TV itself. A lot of TV shows, even ones that you think have big myth arcs and all this, like The X-Files or Star Trek Next Generation and all that, no. They make up the season finale with no idea how they're going to solve it. They figure, we'll solve that in 3 months when we go back into production.
See, now...
That, to me, is the problem.
Now, that's why I like Robot Chicken. And this may sound stupid, but Robot Chicken writes every season finale as if it's their series finale, and they usually end up getting canceled in the show. and then the season opener, if their contract is renewed, their season opener is how they manage to get themselves uncanceled.
Don't you think that that's dangerous though, to write your, let's say, a cliffhanger without having any clue how you're going to solve said cliffhanger?
Well, yeah. I mean, it's dangerous to write a cliffhanger at the end of a series anyway, because...
Well, but what, I mean, just as the viewer, don't you always feel relatively cheated because the payoff is never nearly, in, you know, part two is never nearly as good as the setup for part one? Just look at all the Star Trek ones. I don't think they've had a single one where the payoff in part two was worth the awesome of part one.
I don't know. Doctor Who is pretty good with their part twos.
I'm not a Who fan, so I know, we've established that. So I don't really know that.
But I can tell you that usually when it comes to Doctor, usually when it comes to British series in general, I mean, the Brits have it down right, and their part twos are usually really great, and their part twos are usually like a Christmas special every now and then, depending, and well, that's the way the Brits do it. Six shows. And then if it's a really popular show like Top Gear or Doctor Who, they get a Christmas special.
Well, do you think then, if you think you're getting canceled and you go on a balls out cast wide bloodbath finale, do you think that's wise for the network to then go, you know what, we are going to give you another season?
No, and I can think of...
I can think of multiple examples where that happened. And...
Well, I think the best example I can think of is one that you've talked about before, and that was War of the Worlds.
War of the Worlds was, yeah, that they set up this great cliffhanger, and we're going to completely ignore it because that's not where we want to go for season two.
That's right.
What the fuck? Or Sequest. Did you ever watch Sequest?
No. Never really held my interest.
Season one was, it basically was what it was accused of being. Classic Star Trek underwater.
Okay.
And that's not bad. There were good episodes, there were bad episodes, but it was a very even show.
Okay.
Season two, they wanted to skew younger, so they got rid of most of the older cast. And season two got more ridiculous with the storylines.
Ah.
And ratings dropped. So they said, you know what? We're never going to get... And Spielberg's still involved at this point. Okay? He's still involved with the first two seasons. So they're like, let's just go to the wall. So in season two, they blow up... in the season two finale, they blow up Sequest... kill almost all the main cast, and the only three cast members, one of which is Darwin the Dolphin, that survives are trapped on an alien planet that is all water.
I think I found that series in season three then.
Season three is when Michael Ironside took over as captain of the Sequest, and it jumped 30 years into the future. And that basically the finale of two... forced the producers of season three, which Spielberg was not involved at this point. And by the way, season three, best season of that show, easy. They were kind of like, we don't even want to follow this finale, but we, you know, we kind of have to. So they spent the first 15 minutes of the season premiere really quickly. Okay, we're not going to explain it. Alien technology, everything's okay again. Now we get into our series.
Boom, aliens, answer to everything. And
yeah, then, that was pretty much it. And it was like, yeah, and you wouldn't have had to do that if they had not said, fuck it, cast-wide bloodbath.
Yeah, answer me this. Was Sequest inspired by Abyss?
Probably. Or... Well, you got to remember, 89 to 90, there was The Abyss, Leviathan, Deep Star 6, Lords of the Deep, Depth Core, The Darkness Below. There was like seven... movies that all came out within that 1 year that were about finding something on the bottom of the ocean. That was that was the ocean is the new outer space for a little while.
Okay. It's cheaper for us to film underwater than it is for us to rent a vomit comet.
Actually,
for a while.
In a lot of those, they weren't underwater. Like Leviathan, they're not underwater. They just used soft focus and then had feathers floating in the air. With fans to make it seem like shit was floating in the water. They were totally dry when they were shooting almost all that stuff.
Good effect.
Yeah, you can't tell until I've told you that. Now you go back and watch it and you'll go, holy shit.
Oh, okay, I get it. Yeah.
Cameron, he had the budget, so he shot underwater. Yeah. But Leviathan and Deep Star 6, they couldn't afford that. They were low budget.
It seems like Cameron is just at home underwater anymore.
I think he's a fish.
What? Latest conspiracy theory from Hadley right there. Cameron is a fish.
Go into the water. Live there. Die there.
You're not a Death Clock fan? Metalocalypse?
Yeah, I'm familiar with it.
Okay. Their song, Go Into the Water? Never mind. Any Death Clock fans will get the joke.
I'm sure they will.
But so, what about when you just decide to ignore your what you thought was a series finale, or even a season finale cliffhanger that maybe you get new producers that just go, we're just going to pretend that didn't happen.
Well, I mean, that sucks every time that they do something like that.
But do you think that's disingenuous to the audience that, yeah, you know, we spent the last 20 minutes of your big finale setting this up, and we're never even going to mention it. It just didn't happen because the new set of producers don't like it.
I think it's just kind of mean. And, you know, I'm sure that there are other concerns there with, like, if the budget changes, if they go from having, say, network backing to being syndicated or something like that, in which case there's usually a huge budget slash at that point.
There's usually a cast slash, too, but yeah. Due to the budget slash.
Exactly. And so, you know, I'm sure there are other concerns, but they never quite work, do they? I can't really think of an example of where that ended up being a good thing.
Well, because like a couple,
I guess Sequest.
A couple I'm thinking of, like, did you ever watch In the Heat of the Night?
No.
With Carol O'Connor?
I'm familiar with it, but again, no.
Okay, Carol O'Connor, by season 3, he'd wrestled creative control of the show away from the producers.
Okay.
Season 2, I think it was season 2, ended with a bunch of neo-Nazis in pig masks capturing Chief Gillespie, Carol O'Connor's character, and dragging him away while shooting his daughter. And that was the season 2 cliffhanger.
All right.
He hated that. So just season 3 starts just like normal. Chief Gillespie's there. His daughter's still alive. Everything's fine. It's just never mentioned again.
It was
Carol O'Connor didn't like it, so he was just... I mean, they couldn't even pull one of those, oh, it was a nightmare or some shit. The last 20 minutes of the season 2 finale never happened.
I was going to say they didn't even have, you know, Bob Newhart waking up from a dream going, that was weird or anything like
that. No, it was just, yeah, that whole neo-Nazi pig kidnapping thing didn't happen.
Okay.
And that, to me, I think is real fuck you to the audience.
I think so, especially...
At least address it. You know? At least address it.
Yeah, I was going to say, especially your hardcore fans. Because regardless of what season turnover is, every single show out there has at least a group of 5 people.
There's a cadre.
You know, there's at least a group of 5 people that really think it's the greatest show in the world.
Unless you're Shadow Chasers on NBC in 1986 that charted 106 out of 106 shows in the Nielsen ratings.
No, there were still 5 people that were really, really into that show. Both episodes.
That lasted 8 episodes, dude.
Did it really? Oh, yeah. Wow. Okay. But
you can't spin numbers like we're 106 out of 106. We're the lowest rated show on TV.
I think part of me, if I were involved in that show, part of me might be a little bit proud. Kind of like when we worked at
that station,
and it was 4th in the ratings behind PBS.
5th, because of we were behind PBS. We were a network that was coming in behind PBS for our news.
Yeah, and
we were kind of like, that's kind of a milestone. Not a good one, but it's a milestone, right?
It's an achievement. So, and for those of you wondering, or for those of you not familiar with PBS...
NewsHour with Jim Lehrer.
NewsHour with Jim Lehrer, which is kind of universally panned.
But it outrated us.
With anyone under 70 years of age, it's kind of hated. And yeah, they still outrated us. And that was what, 2 years that happened?
Which should be embarrassing, but, you know, whatever. Okay, now, what about when you go for a series finale and you're told you're canceled? Go, you know, do not end on a cliffhanger.
Right.
Wrap it up. And then you do that, and you do it in a spectacular fashion, and then they go, you know what? A lot of people tuned into that series finale. I think we're picking you up for another season. Do you just go, ah, ah!
Yeah, what do you do at that point?
You could pull a sledgehammer. You remember the show Sledgehammer from 86 on ABC?
Trust me, I know what I'm doing.
Yes, exactly. David Raich was absolutely hilarious in that. For those that don't know, it was basically, what if Dirty Harry were a sitcom? Yeah. And it was funny, too.
I do remember that show, and I do remember getting some laughs at it. And 86, I was what, 11?
Yeah, we were 11.
So it was, I was still rather young, and I had my laughs, and I remember my dad enjoying it. So, yeah.
It was a funny show. Well, season one, they were told because, the thing with Sledgehammer, Scott, was they had a lot of network restrictions. The show was originally developed for HBO. So they had to retool it a little bit. And then the versions you saw and the versions I saw had a laugh track added by ABC.
I remember, yes.
That laugh track was intrusive as hell, and the producers hated it.
And I got to say this about laugh tracks. With the exception of sitcoms, and with the exception of anything that has written in the script, pause for laughter. Laugh tracks suck.
Yeah, they do.
If you can, get a live studio audience.
Like Married with Children, they would pause for the laughs because there were people there. They could see it.
Exactly. Or Fresh Prince of Bel-Air did the same thing. A lot of sitcoms that had a live studio audience, and you would even occasionally see the cast break just a little bit.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it Saturday Night Live, of course, being live, it's kind of famous for that.
There were a lot. I saw one, just on a quick divergence, on Saturday Night Live. Did you ever see the Ron Howard episode back when Eddie Murphy was still a cast member?
No.
Joe Piscopo gives this, yes, kind of nod to Ron Howard's great cover of one of his screw-ups. Ron Howard's playing Opie, but he's coming back to Mayberry, and it's all sexualized and drugs. And Eddie Murphy is playing Floyd the Barber, who was white in the TV show.
Right.
And Joe Piscopo is playing the drunk Otis. And so there was an earlier gag how he doesn't even recognize Floyd anymore because he's black now. And so he starts yelling at Floyd, and he keeps calling him Otis. He goes, okay, I got it. Oh, I got it, Opie, but I'm Floyd. He goes, I told you I can't remember what you look like anymore. And you see Joe Piscopo kind of, good cover, Ron. He's like, because you can see Eddie Murphy trying not to laugh when he keeps being called Otis. And he's like, sure. Okay, Opie, but I'm Floyd.
Oh, back when Saturday Night Live was good.
No shit. But with Sledgehammer, not only did you have that laugh track, but, you know, the show was kind of cartoony.
Yeah, it really was.
I mean, it had cartoon physics. Like I said, it's what if Dirty Harry were a cartoon, but live action?
A cartoon sitcom.
Well, in the series finale / season one finale now, they nuked L.A. Sledge accidentally set a nuke off and killed everyone. So they said, you know what? We're going to go out. Let's literally go out with a bang. A lot of people tuned in, so they got picked up for a second season, and they're like, fuck.
Wait, did they go all post-apocalypse or what?
Prequel. Season 2 takes place before season one.
Oh, boo.
What else are you supposed to do?
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, they're backed into a corner there, Scott.
That's
how
true.
Else are you supposed to do that?
I guess I got to give them some credit for doing that, at least, you know.
Instead of ignoring it, they're like, yeah, it just hasn't happened yet.
There you go.
So, yeah, you've got ones like that, or, you know, you were going to say something.
Well, I was going to say another one that comes to mind is Under the Dome.
Which I don't watch, so I...
Well, I haven't caught the last few episodes.
Scott tells me. Brad tells me it's absolutely horrendous. That's why he watches it, because he said it's so bad, he can't believe this made it onto TV.
It is amazingly Stephen King. I'll put it to you this way. In the first episode, which, for those that don't know, my old cable company that I've gotten rid of had a network blackout with the NBC affiliate here. So I got to see the first couple of, or wait a minute, that's not on NBC. There, no, there was.
Isn't that FX?
That's ABC. ABC.
Or ABC. Okay.
ABC.
Which would be Disney then.
But anyway, we Dawn and I caught the first couple of episodes together, and we were watching, and she is sitting there, and in every time that they introduce a character, she goes, okay, this guy's going to be this stereotype, or this girl's going to be this stereotype, and this is going to happen to him, and I'll be damned if later, like by the second episode, exactly what she predicted happened to them. And
yeah, that's just bad writing.
It's a common thing that King does with his characters.
Oh, yeah, he uses, well, I'm going to guess, was one of the characters a writer who's struggling with alcoholism?
Ding.
Gee, because that's not in every single thing King does, right?
But actually, I don't think it was a writer, but there was a struggling alcoholic in there. But anyway, and we were just picking this out, and so I kind of stopped watching. I guess I should pick up the rest, especially to see how they ended it, provided it was supposed to be a one-off series. One and done.
Yep.
And apparently it got good enough ratings that the guys at ABC went, okay, you get a second season. And they're like, buh.
Well, you know, you've also got like the Babylon 5 situation. Babylon 5 was scripted out over 5 seasons.
Right.
He, you know, he knew exactly where he was supposed to be, and it was paced and whatnot.
Right.
So seasons 1 through 3 were kind of slow because he knew where he was going. Well, ratings weren't too great, so they said, all right, you know, as you go into season 4, this is your final season, so wrap it up. So basically he compressed seasons four and five into season 4, which meant a lot more big things happened, and it happened a lot faster. Ratings went up quite a bit. And in some places I've read said the ratings almost tripled for season 4.
Well, there you go.
So he wrapped it up. Season 4 finale, series finale.
You get a season 5, Dave.
You get a season 5. The ratings were so good. He's like, but the story's over.
Yeah. What do I do now?
So that's why season 5 is kind of meandering and seems kind of directionless, because it was.
There weren't examples aren't coming to mind, but I tend to remember that happening to a couple of shows.
That happened to a lot of shows, like Twin Peaks.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, where they kind of, they're in the latter seasons, they made that switch from this huge story arc that took up the entire season to that episodic, it's in, it's out, it's in, it's out.
Well, in the case of Twin Peaks, it was, they never meant to solve Laura Palmer's murder.
Okay.
You know David Lynch being weird.
Being David Lynch.
He said, we're never going to solve it. This is always going to be the mystery. And then the ratings started to fall, but the critics were still like, you know, we're sticking through with this because we want to see who killed Laura Palmer. So ABC made him solve the mystery in the middle of season 2. And then it was, now what?
Yeah.
We solved Laura Palmer's murder. Now what?
That's kind of the backbone of the show.
And I mean, I still liked the post Laura Palmer murder episodes, but they weren't as good as the other episodes, because the other episodes it's weird to say you're focused even when you don't know where you're going.
Well, you can be focused on a journey and not necessarily a destination. So,
but then you've got shows like Lost that are just making it up as they go along,
which can
tell. Because to me, that's a perfect example of what should have been a series finale was season 7. Juliet in the 1970s banging on the bomb on the nuke with a rock while crying at the bottom of the well. That should have been the series finale. That nuke going off in the 70s would have wrapped everything up, but they said, no, man, this thing is still getting great ratings. You've got another season. And then it was all just weak, weak shit.
Yeah. And there have been a couple of writers that they went out at the top of their game. Well, Breaking Bad, for instance, is going out at the top of its ratings.
See,
game.
I don't watch Breaking Bad. I watched the first 2 episodes and just went, this isn't for me.
Right.
I'm not saying it's bad. I'm not like, oh, this show sucks. I'm saying it's not for me.
Right.
I didn't enjoy it. You enjoy it? Fine, fair enough. I'm not going to shit on you for it.
And to be honest, I only recently got Showtime, so I have, or HBO, whichever one it airs on.
AMC.
I didn't have the network before. And so me. And so I haven't gotten into the series, but I know it's coming up to a wrap, and I'm seeing everybody.
Actually, it was last week.
Okay.
The week we're recording this, the series finale was last week.
Okay. Then, you know, I know it wrapped up, and everybody on the internet has been all a Twitter. So I almost, I have to respect shows that do that, that go, this is it. This is the end. I've heard Dexter kind of did the same thing.
Dexter was a real weak finale.
Okay.
Instead of going out on top, they went out with this milquetoast meh.
Ah.
Even leaving it open enough that we can always bring this character back.
Ah, okay.
And you know, that's what I wanted to talk to you about a little bit. Why do you think they go for these weak ass? You've got these great buildups, like The Sopranos. The Sopranos ending was a complete textbook example of we're scared.
Yeah.
If we kill Tony, then we're going to piss off half of our fan base. If we don't kill Tony,
we're going to piss off half of our fan base.
So we're just going to cut to black and you decide if Tony lived or died. That's just cowardly. And I'm sorry, there are all these magazine articles about how it was groundbreaking and the audience gets to decide. No, that was cowardly. Do you agree or disagree that Sopranos finale was an act of cowardice on David Chase's part?
No, I don't think it was an act of cowardice. I think it was an act of brilliance. I think I like shows that engage the audience's imagination. And I think that The Sopranos finale is a perfect example of that.
I felt cheated. I felt like, fuck you. Just, you know what? Screw your whole series then.
Okay.
That's how I felt with that one. Well, how about when the last, even though technically, even if you're building up to it a little bit, say the last 30 minutes of your series finale, you just go batshit insane and say, fuck everything that came before. I'm throwing my religious beliefs into this, like Battlestar Galactica.
Yeah, I was going to say you've talked about Battlestar Galactica before and the return of the space angel. And
Starbuck is a space angel. They land on Earth, but we're not even proto-humans yet. So they are what jumpstart humanity, and it was all done by God. And this is intelligent design. And it was just, oh, fuck you, Ron Moore. Fuck you. I sat through 4 seasons and that fucking TV movie for that.
Yeah. Yeah. That's, I agree. I don't, when it comes to my fiction, especially science fiction, I don't think religion needs to play a part. I mean, religion can be there, and I think Firefly is a perfect example. You had Shepherd Book, and you had this kind of, it's kind of Christianity, but not really, and he's not really a pastor, he's a shepherd, blah, blah, blah. And they had the religious side of life that they explored, but it wasn't, slapping you upside the head with a Bible.
Well, even classic Star Trek did that. Look at like episodes like The Doomsday Machine with Commodore Decker, where, you know, after the planet killer destroys, you know, kills his crew and everything.
Right.
And he's like, Jim, they say there's no devil, but I've seen him. You know, stuff like that. It subtly brings religion in without beating you over the head with it.
Right. And I,
that's done well.
I think that any series that switches from that kind of an approach to a, hey, guess what? Here's my beliefs. They're laid out. They're true. And in this universe that
it's always been this.
It's always been this. Ta-da. And that's BS. That's blah. I don't like that. And I'm struggling to think of another series that did something like that.
Well,
Lost.
Lost was one.
I mean, Lost, coming in and going, guess what? They're in purgatory. Oh, spoilers. Fuck it. You know, it kind of makes, it hurts.
It's kind of showing indignity to your audience. You're like, you know what? Kind of like what Heroes did. I remember you were still working at the NBC affiliate with me when Heroes started.
Right.
And I believe you watched that, right?
I did. I watched the first season.
Do you remember the producers the whole time were telling us this is a self-contained season. It will not end on a cliffhanger. All the storylines will be wrapped up, and then season 2 will be all new characters just set in the same universe.
Right.
They said that on camera, in interviews. then we're all gathered around. We're all watching the season one finale, and we're like, that storyline ended on a cliffhanger. That storyline ended on a cliffhanger. That you sons of bitches.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like, you lying sons of bitches.
It's one of the reasons why I like American Horror Story.
And see, I watched the first season, and first of all, I hated the finale of that.
Okay.
You want to talk about a meaningless cast-wide bloodbath? Hey, we still got 5 cast members alive. Suicide, 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 suicide. What? Okay, you were straining credibility up to this point. Now you're just saying, credibility? What's that word mean?
See, but I like American Horror Story because each season is, it's a self-contained universe. They're the same actors playing different characters. And so it's, and speaking of which, we're coming up on the third.
Coven.
Yeah, Coven, which my other podcast, American, it's
another podcast.
Pagan podcast is going to
You're
going to
be covering that?
Yeah, we're going to
On Cinespell, Lisa's going to cover that too.
Yeah, I've already gotten email of, what the hell are they doing? Blah, 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 blah. They're giving pagans a bad name. And it's just shut up.
In all honesty, the part that offended me the most in the promos was that absolutely castrated, pussified version of the animals, House of the Rising Sun, that they play in the background. it's almost as bad as Sheryl Crow doing Sweet Child of Mine by Guns N' Roses. You just take everything that was special about that song and said, we're not doing any of that.
Or, oh God, what's the Canadian singer that did Titanic's theme?
Celine Dion.
Celine Dion.
When she
Metallica?
Did Shook, she did Shook Me All Night Long by AC/DC.
Yeah, she did Shook Me All Night Long.
The Metallica one you're thinking of was Avril Lavigne.
Oh, okay, yeah.
So no, you're confusing. Celine Dion did AC/DC. Avril Lavigne did Metallica.
I'm getting my Canadians crossed. So
I didn't know Avril Lavigne was Canadian, but whatever. Okay.
What?
I don't know. She's stupid. So, but I mean, like, for a series finale, don't you want the storylines wrapped up? You want an emotional tag to everything, and you don't want to feel like you're cheated. So my question to you is, why is this so hard? Do you think it is network imposition that, you know, no, we want this, we want it safe? Do you think it's the producers being afraid to do something? Or do you think it's just, we don't know what we're doing?
I think it could be a combination of all of them. I honestly think it could be a big combination of all of them. I mean, you could have a great, great writer. And I'm going to pick one that you probably won't agree with, but let's say Stephen Moffat. Let's say that he, for the Sherlock finale, has this grand idea of what to do, and the BBC comes in and goes, wait a minute, no. Not really something the BBC would do because of the way they run things, but let's say he brings Sherlock over and puts it on NBC. Yeah, you're going to have the network coming in, and we've talked about this before. The network executive is going to have notes.
Yeah. Go back to our episode of non-creative people involved in creative endeavors. Yeah.
This is going to sell. We've got merchandise tied into this. Here, can you do this with the Mayans? Can you bring in the Mayans?
Or,
they're hot right now. Or
to stick with your example, the 1996 Doctor Who Fox pilot.
Right.
We have to Americanize this. That British-y stuff that the series is famous for and has been doing for 40 years.
Yeah.
No. We need this Americanized. And everyone hated it. The Americans hated the Americanized Doctor Who, and the Brits hated the Americanized Doctor Who.
Right. So did the Australians and the New Zealanders. And
you know what I mean.
I understand, a few families from Paraguay thought it was very distasteful. But you're going to have that influence of the executive going
marketability.
Do this. And then you're going to have budget restraints. You know, you could come up with and suddenly in
we need $3 million for this finale.
Yeah. In 1836, you know, whatever show we're dealing with, it caps off in 1836 London. Well, what we need to do is bring in aliens and destroy London in 1836.
And then the vampires show up.
Yeah, and then zombies. And meanwhile, your accountant's looking at that going, okay, there's our 1 million mark. There's our 2 million mark. There's our 3 million mark. There's our 8 million mark. There's our 32 million mark. We are not making a Hollywood film, you doink. And then the zombie.
Doink?
Well, I chose joint. I doink. God, I can't talk tonight. I chose doink.
Just haven't heard you use that insult before.
So the accountant will come in and go, okay, zombies are good.
They're cheap,
vampires
too.
Vampires are good.
Cheap, too.
Aliens are out.
They're expensive.
No aliens. The mermen and the shark people that are fighting under the ocean. No, that's not happening. And do me a favor. When the Thames suddenly wells up, fills with lava and blood, and then takes out. No, that's not happening. You know, so the writer's going to go, well, shit, I'm going to have to rewrite this, and it's not going to be as good or as epic, and that's the way it is. So, you know, you're going to have those execs, those accountants dealing with it. You're going to have sometimes even the fan base. You're never going to please the entire fan base.
Which is where I think the cowardice angle comes in. And you're too afraid to piss them off.
You call it cowardice. Some people call it brilliant writing, like in The Sopranos, when they just fade to black and go, you decide. Some people went, oh, that's brilliant. Some people went, like you.
Fuck you.
That sucks. And you're always, I think, regardless of your finale, you're going to have that fan base of our fictional 1836 London thing going, wait a minute, they've been building up to aliens, and there were no aliens, and the shark people, what was the point? And the writer in the meantime is going to go, sorry, guys, I got all this
handcuffed.
To deal with. You know, handcuffed.
Well, then what about when you go the opposite? And I can only think of one example where this was done right. It's been done numerous times. Well, no, two examples where it was done right.
Okay.
You brought up Newhart earlier and right. St. Elsewhere.
Yes.
With the whole series didn't actually exist kind of thing. And with St. Elsewhere, almost every TV show didn't really exist.
The entire universe of television ceases to exist.
Including
yes.
Doctor Who. Somebody recently found out how Doctor Who's been pulled into the Westfall universe.
Okay.
But, you know, that can work if it's done right. Newhart did it right. St. Elsewhere did it right. Enterprise did it wrong. And in a weird way, now, I think at the time I would have hated this. Now I would have thought it was brilliant. I know you were never a big Deep Space Nine fan,
right.
But how they wanted to end that series.
Okay.
Do you remember the episode Beyond the Farthest Star where Ben Sisko kept having flashback-style dreams to being a black writer in the 1930s writing science fiction pulp named Benny Sisko?
Kind of, sort of, yeah.
It was going to turn out that all of Star Trek, all the franchises and all the movies were stories written by Benny Sisko for a pulp magazine. Paramount went, are you fucking insane? No now, fucking way.
Now, I have to give Paramount credit for that because I don't see that flying with the fans very well.
That's
at
why
all.
I said at the time,
yeah.
In 99, I would have went, fuck you.
Yeah.
But now I would have went, that's actually kind of brilliant.
I don't know about that. I think it still would have. No, I think that there would have been so much backlash. Voyager did something very similar. When I'm thinking of Voyager, when you had Riker watching the holodeck.
No, that was Enterprise.
That
the
was
entire
Enterprise.
Series
okay.
of Enterprise took place on the holodeck that Riker was watching during Next Generation.
Yeah.
So therefore, hey, Enterprise never happened.
Yeah.
That to me, even though Enterprise sucked, that was just a fuck you to the fan base.
I don't know if it was a fuck you to the fan base or them going, okay, we know you hate this, so ta-da, it's fiction. We can fix the universe now.
I'm not sure. That one was just the meh. Well, and see, I hate reset buttons anyway. Like Voyager, you brought up Voyager. Voyager could have had a great one. They had the Year of Hell storyline, the multi-episode arc where it just kept jumping to different points in the year, and Voyager's more beat up, and characters are getting killed and all this, and you're going, yeah, this could really wind up to be something. Nope, reset button at the end. Everything's exactly what it was at the end of the story, and you go, pointless then!
Yeah.
The last 3 hours were pointless!
Yeah. Yeah, I can understand. Yeah, that would piss a lot of people. Well, the same could be said about the Star Trek movies, the recent, you know, the most recent reboot.
The J.J. Abrams reboot.
The J.J.
Right.
Abrams reboot. People are still debating that whole this is an alternate timeline reset button going, okay, it's paying homage. And I understand that that way it leaves the original series and all the original movies and all that crap intact, but still allows us to go off in another story.
Which I thought was actually kind of brilliant for them to, right, to do that.
And there's another side of the coin that, just like you, are calling it cowardly. No. If you're going to reboot, if you're going to try and reboot Star
just
Trek.
Just reboot it.
Just reboot it and make it canon and make it so. Wait a minute. It's got a ring to it. But, you know, make it the what it is and stop it, you cowardly fuck. And I don't know.
Well, what about when you have a series finale that is not meant as a series finale, but actually turns out to be kind of like Futurama, in your opinion? You're just going to go, that can serve as that, even though it wasn't like Stargate Universe. Stargate Universe ended on what was meant to be a season finale. A pretty dark one, but a season finale. And then they got canceled. And you went, that actually can serve as a pretty decent series finale, though, too.
Okay.
Because since the Destiny, they can't really control it all too well. By this point, they were able to steer and stop when they wanted. And they found they had to go between galaxies, which meant the Destiny powers up by flying through stars. There's no stars between galaxies. Actual science, imagine that. And so they're like, we don't have enough food, you know, to go into like glide mode to be able to have enough energy to get to the next star. We don't have enough food or air. We'll use up the energy we need and then we're dead. So they started repairing all these hydropods, you know, the hibernation pods that they found, and everyone went into hibernation while they were going to go on this journey that would take them 3 years. Well, one of the pods malfunctioned, so Eli is sitting there. He's got 2 weeks of food and air, and he's just sitting there watching as they're leaving all the stars, and it just goes to a black field, and he's just like, you know, knowing that he's got 2 weeks or he's dead, just watching everything go to black, and then the credits come up, and you go, that was actually really nice and poetic and can serve as a series finale, even though it wasn't meant as one. Yeah. You went, not bad, guys.
No, not bad at all. And should the next Stargate series ever be picked up or run again or anything like that, they've got a good starting point, too.
Yeah, just, you know, the Destiny's been drifting for 3 years, and maybe Eli's dead, maybe he's not.
Yeah.
Who knows?
I don't know. So, yeah, but yeah, I mean, that works out well.
Well, then what about series finales? And you see, what we think of as a series finale, wrapping up the storylines and everything, that is something that is relatively new in TV. They didn't start doing that until the 70s. Before that, even if you knew you were done, you just had a final episode.
Okay.
You didn't have a finale. It was just, we're not on the air anymore. You didn't wrap up any lingering plot lines. You didn't do anything like that. What do you think caused them to go, we need to actually finalize everything instead of just, you know, well, Lucy and Desi, this was their last adventure. Instead of going, this is Lucy and Desi saying goodbye to the audience.
You know what I bet it was? I'll bet it was a combination of fans clamoring, you know, no, I want this wrapped up. I want to know the end. And I don't want an extended universe, et cetera. I don't want books or comics a la Buffy, et cetera, et cetera. I want this wrapped up at the end of the series. And so in the 70s, and I'm sure you've got on the top of your mind what the first real series finale was.
The one I'm thinking of, their SWAT had an actual series finale, and that was early 70s. The Rookies had an actual series finale. So it would most likely be a cop or a detective show.
Okay.
That actually did it.
So you've got fans asking to bring it. And so writers go, well, let's try it. They try it, and series finales, like they tend to do, get good ratings. And so it stuck.
Well, because like think about this, even though it was 69 when Star Trek went out, or the original. Now keep in mind, no Next Generation, no extended universe, just Star Trek in 69. Barely even any books or comics at this point. Would you have preferred them to go out the way they did with just another episode? Or would you have liked to have seen the Enterprise go out in some blaze of glory and, you know, Kirk, McCoy, and Spock save the Federation from some otherworldly menace.
I think with Star Trek, just because of the phenomenon that it became after that original airing of the series.
But I'm asking you right now, before you get to that, in 69, would you have wanted that? Not even knowing what the series would become.
I don't know. I can't answer that. I don't know. I wasn't alive in 69. I can't put myself in those kinds of shoes.
Okay.
My answer to that is I don't know.
All right, fair enough.
I think that it worked out for Trek's favor, obviously.
Well, yeah.
Because then it led into the movies.
The animated series before that, and then the movies.
The animated series and the movies and stuff like that. And that's certainly one way of thinking of going, let's just go out on another, you know. Again, if a writer has an oversight arc and somebody comes now and says, well, yeah, your TV series is being canceled, but I want to make this a web series, or I want to turn this into a comic book, or I want to move on with books in an extended universe, so to speak. Then maybe they'll just make it another episode with a few nods and some cast bows at the end.
Not even always that. Like NYPD Blue, their series finale, knowing that it was a series finale, I thought it was kind of ballsy in the fact that they went to that old 60s style, Scott. It was just another episode. They're solving a murder as they always do. Really, the only thing that was different was Sipowicz gets promoted to lieutenant and takes over command. Otherwise, it didn't really wrap anything up, and a lot of people were pissed, and I kind of was at the time, and now I went, I kind of liked that.
Yeah, and who knows? Maybe they'll bring it back.
I doubt it.
Well, I do too, but who knows?
But then what about the other phenomena, which you just reminded me of? What about when you do have a series finale? You've wrapped it up like Farscape. Peacekeeper Wars wrapped everything up. There are, yeah, maybe some dangling plot lines from earlier in the, you know, early seasons and whatnot, but overall, that series is wrapped up from Peacekeeper Wars. So now, that was what, 2004? Peacekeeper Wars was?
Three, four.
We're talking a decade since right. That's aired, ballpark.
Right, right.
Now they're getting the cast all back together to make a web series of Farscape that comes after that. And you just kind of go, why? Why now? Why a decade later? You wrapped it up. Isn't this just kind of saying we want another bite?
Nostalgia is hot right now.
Nostalgia for a decade-old show?
Yeah, I mean, 10 years is about the minimum. I mean, think about it. The guys that watched it at 15 that were really into it are now 25. Maybe a few of them have kids of their own, given they're young, but... you know, maybe a few of them have kids of their own, and it'll be a new series that they can share together. I think 10 years is your absolute minimum for nostalgia to kick in.
See, I see that as just kind of insulting that, yeah, we wrapped it all up, but there's still money to be made. To me, it just seems greedy.
See, and to me, maybe the writer went, you know what? I got another story in me. Let me put this down and we'll shop it around a little bit. Sometimes writers just have, you've just got another story in you. And so you continue the universe.
Okay, now what about anthology series usually are not connected, via episodes. Sometimes they are. I can think of a couple that are. And even though sci-fi did one more season after this, what about when the Showtime Outer Limits series went out in the late 90s and said, you know what, we're actually going to have a series finale that makes all these things continuity. Where they had a time traveler, Amanda Plummer played a time traveler in an episode, and it turned out that her traveling through time was what was causing some of these other episodes to happen, and a time tribunal was bringing her together, so they actually said, ha! Continuity, and you didn't think there was any, motherfucker.
See, and that's kind of cool.
And I kind of went, I don't think I've ever seen an anthology series that did that before that said, nah, actually, you didn't know it at the time, but these are all linked.
Oh, there was one other series that did it, and it pissed me off.
Which one?
Doctor Who.
And that's not an anthology series.
Well, it kind of is, it kind of isn't.
Well, it has recurring, the same characters.
Yeah, it has recurring characters. It has... continuity, at least amongst season, or at least amongst doctors.
At least amongst stories.
At least amongst stories. And then with the most recent companion, I won't get into it, but basically there was a way that she was the cause of everything good and bad happening to all of the doctors through all time. And you're just like, why the fuck did she was an interesting character. Clara was a good character. And you just, you made her a, he did the same thing with River Song. He made them both Mary Sues. And I hate Mary Sue characters.
Well, speaking of that,
hate them.
How about like with Torchwood, when you've got an extended universe, and I don't mean like in books and stuff, but I mean extended universe with spinoffs and whatnot.
Right.
Can the events of one affect, you know, like say one series ends, can that affect the other? Such as, does how awful Miracle Day was for Torchwood affect the Doctor Who universe at all? Because that, to my knowledge, Torchwood isn't in the current Doctor Who, so Miracle Day was basically their series finale.
Yeah, it's a time-traveling thing, so
you know what I mean. Yeah, basically, and Miracle Day was fucking awful. So does that taint, even tangentially, the Doctor Who universe with their terrible finale?
Not if you ask the average Whovian.
That's I'm asking you as a Doctor Who fan.
Do you
agree with me that Miracle Day was fucking terrible? It was great idea, not handled properly at all.
Yeah, it was great idea executed badly. And I like the idea behind Miracle Day. And
talk about one that needs a freaking remake.
Yeah, but I hope not. It's certainly possible. I mean, they coexist in the same, in at least one of the same timelines. So they're more than tangential. They are intertwined.
But that's what I'm saying. Wouldn't it have been interesting? I know Torchwood was only picked up as itself by Starz, who have co-produced Miracle Day.
Right.
Wouldn't it have made sense to have Doctor Who or Sarah Jane or somebody involved, considering it was, you know, the biggest thing to ever happen on planet Earth ever? Maybe have, you know, the bigger characters have a cameo? Maybe?
That really did amaze me, because something as big as Miracle Day would have attracted the TARDIS, which would have brought the Doctor.
Right. That to me was kind of like them almost going, see, Miracle Day is its own thing. It's not part of Doctor Who anymore. Kind of, sort of.
But
even though Miracle Day directly follows Children of Earth, you know what I mean.
I know what you mean. And that's what I'm saying. It was a weird thing that seemed out of place, and I think that's why Miracle Day sits so badly with, even with diehard Torchwood fans. They're like, what? Okay.
Well, that existed.
Captain Jack is still there. I'm okay. But, you know, it's... So I don't know what to do, because I don't know where the writers are going. I don't know what's going on. And that I think is another thing that you can do with your fan base, is to just leave them out in that. Wait a minute. This is not how the universe would really work.
All right. Before we go out, little known David E. Kelly practice connected show Snoops. How about their series finale? It's a normal episode. Then they're protecting a rock star, so they're watching her film her rock video, and the cameras spin around, and they all go to David E. Kelly's office and grab him. And it was, hey, just fuck it. You know, it was one of those just, hey, fuck it. We've been a TV series the whole time.
Oh, okay.
And then the characters go and appear on The Practice the next year as characters in The Practice continuity, and you kind of go, wait a minute.
I don't know.
So does that negate your series finale? Wait, what?
No, it is kind of a wait what thing, but it's also kind of tangential to the it was a dream, or it was, you know, that's an idea of badly handling that kind of an ending of a Tommy Westfall ending. That's kind of like, okay, bizarre, but all right, you know.
Except he'd already kind of set that up. In Boston Public, they had a crossover with The Practice.
Right.
And then in The Practice, a guy used an alibi that he was watching Boston Public. So is Boston Public a TV show in this continuity, or is it real?
Yeah, that's a weird... that's
one of those, okay.
Exactly. But anyway, thank you guys for joining us this week. And we talked about series finales and why they work and why they don't. And I'd love to hear from you, Josh, how do they get a hold of us?
1201beyond@gmail.com or 1201beyond.com.
Or there's always the Facebook page. And we will see you guys next time.
Lost in the Static is a 1201 Beyond production. Visit 1201beyond.com for more great shows.